News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.
Thanks indeed. You're welcome to Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall. Coming up in the next half hour, we talk to the Dublin Business Innovation Centre about its new city centre shared workplace for start-up firms. The Managing Director of US Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management discusses the importance of the transatlantic digital economy, and we review latest developments on the markets. First, a look at some of the stories making headlines this morning, and turning to the Irish Times. First story carried in all the papers and overnight. The US Federal Reserve has, as expected, increased its key interest rates by 0.25%. Photograph of Janet Yellen on the business supplement of the Irish Times. It's the second such increase this year, and now brings the federal funds rate to between 1 and 1.25%, as expected. Joe Brennan writes that the Central Bank Deputy Governor Sharon Donnery has rejected recent suggestions that Ireland faces another housing bubble, saying lending for home purchases remains subdued a decade after the last crash. However, Ms. Donnery warned at the publication yesterday of the bank's biannual macro financial review that the government should stick to a prudent fiscal policy. This was in response to a question at a press conference about indications that Taoiseach Leo Varadkar intends to loosen economic policy by easing the government's debt reduction target and using funds previously earmarked for a rainy day fund to invest in infrastructure. Turning to the Irish Independent, still on the whole issue of property and rents, Charlie Weston writes that rental costs have continued to increase, but there are signs that the rises may be moderating. Private sector rents were up 7.4% in the year for the first 3 months of the year, but the increase was less than 0.1% when compared with the three previous months, according to the Residential Tenancies Board. The easing off in rent rises coincides with the introduction by the government of rent pressure zones. Also in the Irish Independent, John Mulligan writes that visitors from the Middle East and further afield will play an increasingly important role in Ireland's tourism sector in a post-Brexit world. That's according to Tourism Ireland Chief Executive Niall Gibbons. His comments came as figures yesterday from the Central Statistics Office show that weak sterling is continuing to pummel visitor numbers from Britain to Ireland. There were 796,000 visits to Ireland from Britain between January and March. That was 6.5% lower than the 850,000 that were recorded in the first quarter of last year. And finally, John Mulligan also writes that Ryanair would use 230-seat aircraft to service high-density routes where it's either slot-constrained or where demand peaks at certain time of the year, if it converts some existing Boeing orders for the 737 MAX jets to a larger version of the aircraft. But even if it ordered the larger jets, the biggest version available of the 737 MAX wouldn't join the Ryanair fleet for another 2 or 3 years. Coming up, why startup companies should travel into space on Dublin's Dawson Street, and a leading US economist on the importance of the transatlantic digital economy. Stay with us. It's 6:38, you're listening to Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall. One of the downsides of the strong recovery in Dublin's commercial property market is the difficulty facing entrepreneurs and small startup firms in finding affordable office space in the city centre. The Dublin Business Innovation Centre, or Dublin BIC, has just announced plans to alleviate this challenge, and Michael Colligan, its chief executive, joins us in studio. Michael, tell us what you're doing. You've located a space in Dawson Street.
We have indeed. Good morning, Vincent, and good to be here. Startup companies and scale-up companies have many challenges, of course, and one of those is access to affordable and flexible office space. We're very familiar with this. We currently run and manage the Guinness Enterprise Centre, which is located in Dublin 8. That's the largest enterprise centre in the country with 450 people in it. It's near capacity. It's come to our attention in particular over the last maybe year, 18 months, that access to space in the city centre in the Dublin 2 area is becoming a real challenge. We know what's happening there. There are over 70 cranes in the sky at the moment. The strategic development zone in the Docklands area means the infill will happen very quickly. There's no question Dublin 8 will continue to be the growth engine. There's 1,500 to 2,000 people employed in startup and scale-up companies there. But right in the heart of the city centre, access is a real challenge.
Now, this space, and it's at space Dublin BIC, I think, is how people access it. It's actually obviously a physical building down the Nassau Street, the Trinity College end of Dawson Street. What is the space available?
Yeah. So the space that we have is it's over two floors. It will cater for up to about 250 people. We opened it on April 3rd as an indication of the demand the private offices, up to 20 of them, were filled within the first week of opening. The co-working facility, which will cater for over 100 people, has opened in the last couple of weeks, and that provides co-working for either a dedicated desk or what we call a hot desk. So that's most suitable for small companies starting off with one or two people. The big thing really, Vincent, for the scale-up companies actually, is they know they have to pay. And of course, I'd like to not to pay too much.
And I am going to ask you the price
in a second. Of course, yes. But the real thing is the flexibility. So what do I mean by flexibility? I mean two things. Number one is not tying yourself into a long-term lease, because you can't afford that in terms, you don't know what size you're going to go to. And the second thing then is to be able to flex up or down, mainly up. So in that regard, for example, the companies that moved in on the 3rd of April were employing 70 people. But last evening, those companies are employing 100 people. So they have had 30 new jobs created by those companies in that period of time.
And how does your space, it's a co-working public toilet,
yes.
How does your space deal with that kind of volatility, I suppose?
Well, and again, it's a great question. And I suppose, I've referred there to the Guinness Enterprise Centre, which we run in Dublin 8, and we have deep expertise in this area. And these spaces are actually not about the physical space. They're about the community. And they're also about your ability as an operator to be able to, you have a range of offices. We have some at 200, 300, 400, 600 square foot, 1,200, 2,000. So now what's happened already with some of the people that have come in at 400, they've moved into the 1,200, some of the 1,200 is now looking to move into the 2,000. So that's how we deal with it, by moving these around and flexing them around.
What is the price for people who want to maybe do a relatively short-term lease or more flexibly?
Yeah. So, the fixed offices or the private offices are already all let, but in the co-working the price varies from about 200 per month to 400, depending on if it's what we call a hot desk or a dedicated desk. And for those who are interested to we have an open day every Thursday, contact us at space@dublinbig.ie or come onto the website www.dublinbig.ie.
Now you'll argue, because we have a number, probably not enough given the way the economy is going, but we have a number of such co-sharing hubs such as Fumbly Lane, one starting in the Pearse Street area. But you argue that Dublin Big provides more than physical space to start-up companies.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for raising that. So Dublin Big is an organisation. Our role in life is to empower entrepreneurs to start and scale businesses. We do that in a number of ways. Number one is we provide what we call an Investor Ready programme to help them to raise funding. Number two, we provide access to finance. We run and manage the Halo Business Angel Network. We run and manage the AIBC Capital Fund, which is invested in 40 companies. We run annual events such as Futurescope and the Convention Centre, which 1,200 people there recently in May. And finally, we provide access to space. So it's really important that the space is part of the overall support set, so those companies can get those supports from Dublin Big.
So will individuals or small firms tenanting now in this new space in Dulcet Street get access to that wider support network?
Absolutely. And really, I always say it's not about the physical space. Ironically, we've named the space at Dublin Big in terms of the branding of it, etc. But it's access to those whole range of supports, because for startup companies, there are so many challenges and these people are incredibly busy and there are all sorts of supports around there. But if you come out of a multinational, you set up a new business, you're not really familiar with all that detail. We live, breed that every day at Dublin Big. And the kind of companies that have come into the new facility now, scale-up companies, are second-time entrepreneurs with a lot of experience, and that's available to new people coming in there as well.
Sounds like people need to get in touch with you fast. Space is going
to be... Space at Dublin Big. Thanks very much, Vincent.
Okay. Michael Culligan of Dublin Big, thanks indeed for joining us. Now, one of the discussion topics at the government-sponsored data summit beginning in Dublin's Convention Centre this morning is the transatlantic digital economy, linking European and North American businesses and consumers. A keynote speaker on the topic is Joseph Quinlan, Managing Director, US Trust, Bank of America Private Wealth Management, who's a guest here of the American Chamber of Commerce. And I'm pleased to welcome him to studio. Joseph, thanks for coming in. I don't know whether you're on North American or European time at the moment.
My pleasure, thanks.
The North American-European digital transfer, I suppose, it's the largest such in on the globe, isn't it?
That's right. When you look at the transatlantic service economy, transatlantic digital economy, there's no greater connectivity, data flows, manufacturing and services being blurred. So the U.S. and Europe is leading in this endeavor, but there's a lot of work to be done. It's a little bit lopsided now in the sense that the United States companies, very heavy users of big data. Europe, less so, but the key is, and the challenge is, how do you marry the regulations and harmonization to make it even bigger?
And I suppose it's particular relevance to Ireland because we host a hugely disproportionate amount of servo warehouses here, don't we?
That's right. I mean, Ireland's kind of at the cutting edge. You look at the foreign direct investment, the companies, whether it's Google, Amazon, I mean, really across the board, the tech leaders, they, with Ireland, help driving this process, the cross-border data flow. And it's just really, we're early innings when this, as it all unfolds.
What are the principal threats to this traffic, to this growth? Because I looked at the program for the data summit over the last two, over the next 2 days, and I mean obviously we have our own data protection commissioner here, mm-hmm. who's centrally involved in the whole issue of data protection and consumer privacy. I see a number of chief privacy officers speaking. This whole debate about the protection of data and personal data in particular is a big threat, isn't it?
It's a big threat, and there's so much out there, and companies are gathering so much information on consumers or businesses. Every time you go online, you give another data point or two or three more. So how do you collect the data? How do you analyze it? How do you use it? So, you know, we're putting – the internet is just getting larger and larger. There's more data, and the more data you have, the more information you have about you and I and how do we use it. So what worries me, companies are moving much faster than, say, the regulators. So the regulators are coming up behind and saying, okay, what are the rules? What are the kind of the requirements? What I worry most in particular, we have fragmented markets. So we have a U.S. market, an Irish market, a German market in terms of data use, how it can be used, how it can be transported in and out of the country. The more regulations, the harder the barriers to entry and or do business for companies.
Now, you say the technology and the companies themselves are moving ahead of the regulators, but the regulators themselves are moving at a different pace, aren't they? And seem to have different issues. I mean, what's your view as a U.S. Business person on this case that our commissioner is taking to the High Court here, and the whole issue that basically the protection protocols aren't sufficient that the United States has for data protection?
For data protection, yeah, it's going to be important for Ireland or anyone to really kind of work with the United States and vice versa, the United States to work with Ireland to set the standards, because right now it's a very fragmented, choppy market here in the European Union. And just look at service activities. It's always been fragmented, you know, what you can do in the UK versus Ireland versus the Netherlands. That just adds to cost of business and inhibitor to growth. So it's going to be very important, and Ireland is always kind of at the forefront when it comes to technology, working with multinationals, setting the standards. It's going to be important to kind of lay out kind of a level playing field for all companies to participate in. But companies need to know the rules of the road. That's key.
Now, the current protocol, I think Privacy Shield is called, it's up for its first mm-hmm. annual review in September. I mean, it doesn't seem like the Trump administration, with its kind of ethos of rolling back regulation at a whole lot of different levels, is going to meet the European requirements on this, is it?
To be determined. There is some work going on right now with the administration itself, a lot of moving parts when it comes to trade, data protection, European TTIP, NAFTA. I would hope that what we have in place can be added on to or continue to be bolted on, worked on. So I think that's kind of the worst case scenario. Some big U.S. European digital single market construct, I think that's something for the future, but we're not going to see that there. But I do think the good news, corporations are pushing the regulators are responding to come up with a solution that's suitable for everyone. We're not there yet, but that's what we're working towards.
Do you think what we see as growing economic nationalism in the United States, do you think that might be a threat in itself to the continued growth at this pace of the transatlantic digital economy?
It could be an overarching threat in the sense of the economic nationalism and populism. But, you know, really what the Trump administration has threatened has really not come to fruition just yet, right? We're working with Mexico. There's been no China currency manipulation. The president said he's open to looking at TTIP. So, the words are one thing. Action is another. My biggest fear is that we get there's a pause, there's a reset, no pushing forward with a regulatory framework, while companies have to continue to push forward. I mean, they want to break down the barriers, they want to move the data, they want to collect more. And I think that's what worries me, is that we're stalled, we're in a pause when it comes to regulation, where technology just keeps pushing forward.
Is the dominance of the transatlantic digital economy, is that purely based on ultimately population figures? Will the North American Asian market surpass that just inevitably?
I mean, it could, no doubt. I mean, if you look at, use India, for example. India has 100 million new internet users a year. So that's a large new net citizens coming forward.
No space in Dawson Street for them, no.
No, it would take a lot of space. But, and then China, right, they're writing their own rules and regulations. And China has some very popular companies, Alibaba, Tencent. So yeah, I think it's important for the United States and Europe to get this right because the digital global economy is accelerating in growth, but it's coming from outside the transatlantic economy. So we got to work faster to set the rules and regulations for the rest of the world. And if we don't, then we're going to have a very patchwork digital framework by which companies have to operate globally.
Okay, that's a fascinating topic. Joseph Quinlan, thanks indeed for joining us.
And, thank you.
And hopefully enjoy the conference later this morning. It's 6:53 on Breakfast Business, and Sarah Quirk of Goodbody joins us. Sarah, no surprises, I suppose, that Janet Yellen and the Federal Reserve Open Committee did announce an 0.25% raise in interest rates last night. But they also signalled that they are going to cut back on their bond buying program.
Yeah, so I think what we saw yesterday was, you know, they delivered in some aspects and then surprised in others. So the 0.25% rate increase, that was well flagged to markets and no major surprises there. But I suppose in terms of Janet Yellen, her language, she seemed more optimistic now than she had seemed before. And she came out saying that they're willing to look through some of the recent weakness in the data. So perhaps that shows that they're actually starting to focus, you know, the employment figures are good and they're looking through some of that data and somewhat less data dependent, I suppose, in their decision making. And the real surprise was the commentary in reference to normalising the balance sheet. So that balance sheet grew from in and around 900 billion before the financial crisis to 4.5 trillion today. So the markets have questioned, you know.
This is largely through just emergency buying of quantitative easing, effectively buying bonds mainly.
Exactly, yeah. So it's grown that dramatic amount. And the markets have questioned, you know, when are they actually going to start addressing that and bringing that down to a more normal level? And how are they going to do it? So it was a little bit surprising that she's come out now and said that they are going to start that as early as this year, given if markets stay in the conditions that they're in, and that they'll start that at a rate of 6 billion per month. So we expected that maybe she'd come out and mention it in the September meeting, but it's very optimistic she's come out now and already addressed it.
And even though the markets knew that this some sort of a signal about this so-called tapering had to come at some stage, whether it was the autumn or not, there can be a shock once the Fed confirms it, can't there? But the markets
there
didn't
can be,
react
and the fact that they came
nervously
out
last night
earlier than expected to say it, you'd expect it to be some sort of a reaction, but it was quite muted. The Dow was slightly up and the S&P down slightly, but no major reaction. I suppose that means that the market's a little bit more comfortable with this slow and steady growth that we've been seeing out of the US.
And she's predicting, they continue to predict, 2.2% GDP growth in the States, which is very solid and almost full employment.
Yeah, absolutely. But she did reference that inflation will be slightly less than that 2% level this year, but that they're comfortable with the level that it's at.
So as things stand, the market expects, as scheduled, a third 0.25% increase sometime before the end of the year.
Sometime this year, yeah.
Now, turning to the Bank of England, nobody expecting any interest rate announcements today or indeed any time soon, but things are becoming more complicated for the Bank of England in terms of runaway inflation and slight downturn in the UK economy. Brexit's beginning to bite, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. So the rate decision today, you'd expect that to be something of a non-event in the sense that we've actually seen a very big tick up in inflation in the UK. So it's up at around 2.6% for the core inflation. But what that's really coming from is the weakness in the sterling. So the impact of that really we're seeing in terms of inflationary pressures on households, so they're not seeing their wages keep up with the inflation. And then what we've seen that reflected in is at the start of the year, so for the first quarter of this year, we've seen disappointing growth figures. And that's really what the Bank of England are focusing on. So as long as we see those figures somewhat disappointing, and also as we have Brexit looming, so if there's any difficulties in negotiations there, or if we see wage growth continuing to slow, we don't really expect that we're going to see any major moves out of them.
Yeah, because inflation as well as economic growth it tends to be the key target for all central banks. And I mean, if this inflation was being driven by strong economic growth in the UK, you might be expecting the Bank of England to start.
Absolutely, but what
they've
said,
it's being imported, isn't it? Because of
yeah, so because it's down to the sterling pressures, what they've said is they expect the impact of that to sort of wash through over the next 2 years. So it's really growth where they're focused on in terms of their decision making.
And finally, in London tonight, the annual Mansion House, so-called Mansion House speech, generally strong signals given by both the Chancellor of the Exchequer and the Bank of England Governor. Philip Hammond, the UK Chancellor of the Exchequer, probably in a slightly stronger position now after the election last week.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose that's really where markets are focused on in the UK today, more so even than the race decision. So since the election, you know, there's been a different tone in Westminster, and Hammond has generally had a more soft Brexit approach. So in his speech today, we're expecting him to come out with sort of a new path for Brexit, focusing on, you know, protecting jobs and economic growth. So we're really watching to see exactly what he says and what his stance is.
And that could be good news for Ireland in the longer term too, if it follows through.
Absolutely.
Okay, Sarah Quirk, good buddy, thanks as always for joining us. That's it from Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall for this morning. I'll be back at Bulletins at 7:30 and 8:30. If you missed any of the programme, you can catch us on newstalk.com. Podcast will be published later. But coming back to this morning and after the traffic news, it's over to Paul and Shane with all the stories of the morning on News Talk Breakfast. Stay with us.